This show is part of the RetroZap.com podcast network.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Wrap it up, Fuzzball.
Hello, and welcome to Beltway Banthas, your Star Wars and politics podcast that this week is not live from the Hive of Scum and Villainy, Washington, D.C. Instead, we're live from Orlando, Florida, on the eve of Star Wars Celebration. Right now, we're in our good friend Dennis Keithley's hotel room recording Dennis Keithley of Starship Savers and Scoundrels, along with Joe Tabano of Brews and Blasters and Carly Lane of Nerdist, Sci-Fi Wire, and Supergirl Radio. How are you doing, guys?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm looking at this table right now, and it looks like a tiki, like, it just needs the eyes right now, and it would be fantastic. This is like a crazy tiki totem, so, I don't know, that's kind of where I am right now. Let's talk politics, guys.
Carly, how are you doing?
Really excited. This is my first celebration ever.
Yay.
Woo! So I'm super pumped.
I too am joining the first timers here at Celebration, so I'm super excited.
Awesome, awesome, guys. Like, what are we each looking forward to the most at this celebration?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you had to choose a couple, or some of the things you're looking for.
I don't know what I don't know. Like, I'm literally going to walk in there and kind of whichever the wind takes me, I'm just going to have a great time. Also, I have a ton of things like booked up that I need to do, so I'm probably going to... It's going to be hard to keep me pinned down to those, so it's going to be fun to do, too.
Let the force guide you, Joe.
I suppose so. Yes. Need to trust in the force.
That's not how the force works.
That is totally how the force works. Carly, what are you looking for?
I'm really excited for the two big panels. I'm really looking forward to the 40th anniversary, especially because Hayden Christensen making an appearance in I don't know how long, returning
so
to
long.
Star Wars, you know, convention.
I think the last celebration he was at was 2002.
2002 yeah. In Indianapolis. Yeah.
Okay.
That's insane.
He was walking around with like a Stormtrooper helmet on, and, you know, incognito. I'm getting his autograph.
Nice.
And I'm pretty excited about that.
His photo op sold out.
Yeah.
Within hours, I think,
yeah.
He said.
Yeah.
Record time.
Yeah. Which
yeah.
is, that just warms my heart because I think, you know, whatever your personal feelings on Anakin as a character, I think there's still a lot of love for him as an actor. So yeah. that makes me very happy.
Totally.
I like the prequels.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah. High five.
There's gems.
Yes.
Hidden gems in the prequels.
There is.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
But that Last Jedi panel for sure. Battlefront 2 premiere
nice.
Of
yeah.
stuff.
Did you guys see the teaser?
I saw the teaser.
Haven't seen the teaser yet.
Oh, what? Oh, we'll watch it after this.
What?
It looks sick.
Looks so good.
Yeah.
So good.
So.
Dennis, what are you looking most forward to?
Well, for one, I've been looking forward to meeting everyone that I've only gotten to know online.
Yeah.
Little icons that are buried on the side of Twitter profiles. So this is a nice change. I'm looking forward to all of it. The panels, the merchandise, the autographs. 100% Star Wars at a convention. Can't get better than that.
Yeah, we're already saturated in Star Wars, and I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
On the plane ride over here, I was looking at the guy. He had a 501st shirt. I'm like, hey, Celebration, right? And he's part of the R2 Builders Club.
Oh, nice.
He's like, yeah, I'm pretty much working all weekend. But I'm like, yeah, but you build R2s. Like, come on, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah, it's so great. I saw, you know, a couple of people traveling from D.C. with me going to Celebration, and lots of kids on the plane as well, thankfully, weren't too loud or anything. So.
Yeah.
You know, this is something I've been thinking about generally. I think that, like, Star Wars feels like the ultimate escape from the stresses of the real world. It's the ultimate escapism. You know, Star Wars is something we've used since we were kids to, you know, like, get our minds off of the real world or off, like, stress when we were in school or work or whatever. And I guess, like, how does everyone here view Celebration as an escape from your daily life?
Who wants to go first?
Well, okay. Star Wars came out when I was 3, so it's always been part of my life, and it's come and gone as I've grown up. When I was in high school, I probably distanced myself a little bit because I was more interested in, you know, doing sports and meeting girls and that type of a thing, and then it came back around. especially when we had things like the special editions came out. That's when I got engaged to my wife, and you know, then we had the new movies come out. So this is a culmination of 40 years of fandom for myself. And it's, I've always had Star Wars around. It's been around for huge events in my life. And so now getting to be in an event that is all Star Wars all the time, it's just, I can't explain how incredible that is.
Yeah. Dennis and I are only a couple of years apart. I was born right around Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that I take what he said, transfer it onto me. Yeah, this is like the culmination of a life of loving Star Wars, a good 20 years of admiring and then becoming involved in the Star Wars community.
Right.
And really, you know, just all of that coming together right now. This is the pinnacle. So I'm really excited.
So I'm not a lifelong Star Wars fan. Mostly because my parents weren't diehard Star Wars fans. I was introduced to the original trilogy, I think, when I was about 10 or 11.
Awesome.
And so Phantom Menace was the first movie I saw in theaters, which cool. is why I think, like, part of my fondness for the prequels is that excitement of getting to see my very first Star Wars movie in the theater, like, very soon after I became obsessed with it.
Can I hijack Suarez's podcast for a second and just ask you, do you remember being there at the Phantom Menace?
I do.
Was it good? Was it, like, exciting to be in the theater?
I have this very distinct memory of my family actually surprised me by taking me to the movie. I cried when I realized where we were, and then I remember being so invested, like so engrossed during the pod racing scene. There's a moment where debris flies at the screen, and I ducked. I'm sitting in my seat, and I literally ducked because I was so just entranced by everything. So I don't know. I feel like I've always been pretty unapologetic about Star Wars fandom. It was my first real fandom. Later followed by things like Harry Potter and Buffy, but Star Wars was always my very first love. So, yeah, so this is really exciting. I've been to other kind of, you know, like geek culture conventions, you might say, but this is the first Star Wars exclusive convention. So, and I'm really excited just because I have friends here who, you know, have very close to their hearts. So it's fun to share that experience with people that you care about.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate aspect of it, sharing with all of these people coming. Mm-hmm. I know, like, there are thousands of people here for Orlando Celebration. This is actually my second celebration. I went to the one in London last year when I was living there, and I got to report on it as well for Newsweek, some of the Rogue One news and some of the Last Jedi news about what Rian Johnson was using as inspiration for Episode 8. But like you, Carly, Star Wars has always been part of my life since I was 9, and I saw the originals for the first time, and I remember watching Episode 4 and just utterly falling in love with this majestic masterpiece of a film and its crescendo to the final battle and falling in love with all these characters. And I just it was also my first fandom, I've like watched the films over hundreds of times each, and going after The Force Awakens, or right before The Force Awakens, it wasn't as though my fandom had been diluted or anything, but it wasn't necessarily as active as it had been during my childhood. But
sure.
Once The Force Awakens came out, I experienced this resurgence with everyone else that made my fandom much more prominent than maybe it ever has been before. And going to Celebration London and getting my picture taken with Mark Hamill. Oh my God. Just, Mark Hamill is my hero, has been my hero since childhood. And, it was beyond an honor to, like, finally meet him in person. And in this celebration, I'll be getting my picture with Ian McDiarmid, the Emperor. Nice. So first my ultimate hero, now my ultimate villain. And I guess for me, in terms of escapism, it feels like I'm entering a completely different world. That was what Celebration London was for me, to be with everyone who loved the same thing I did to the same amount that I do. And it's, in a way, it's humbling. Almost, that we are part of this fandom community that ultimately has so much love and respect. And so, you know, we talk about divisiveness sometimes in the fandom a lot, but I feel like that's very superficial. A lot of it is really just online and social media, and I think it's, like, filtered through not being someone in person. And when you meet people in person, it's like, what are you talking about? What are you going to argue about? We're here to have fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
That's like really good. But I'm curious, like more generally, growing up, like what example, like how has Star Wars more generally helped you take your mind off of the real world? Like whether in childhood or today, like, you know, it's no big secret that we have a really crazy political climate right now. I'm wondering how you all use fandom, and specifically Star Wars fandom, and the movies, the media, to like take your mind off of what's going on right now.
So, for Celebration, I am not paying attention to the news whatsoever for the next 4 days.
Good policy.
That's something I don't usually do, and this is like my break from the world. And hopefully we won't be at war when we get back. Nuclear fallout! You know? So, I don't know. But I just feel like it's a really great moment, just like you said, to kind of be immersed into this awesome community and this really exciting moment in fandom. So, why not just kind of switch off a little bit and take a break from the politics and the news and the toxicity that will be there when I get back.
Right.
Growing up, though, I don't know. I don't know if it was ever something that I took a break from, but it informed my sense of right and wrong quite a bit.
Right.
So I was thinking about it in terms of that and saying that these are the good guys, these are the bad guys. Star Wars was very black and white back then. OT is very black and white. And I don't know. And it makes me wonder that I had to learn shades of gray as I got older.
Mm.
So I don't know if it even helped me so much to learn about real-world politics, in the sense that not everything is good and bad, but you also have to learn a lot of different shades.
I mean, that's where I would use it as an example of escapism. It gave you that stark example of good versus evil,
sure,
black versus white, and it just wasn't complicated. You knew the Emperor, Vader, you know, Vader, the personification of evil,
right?
You know, that he was not someone to, you know, cuddle up to like that. He needed to be taken down, and there's sort of that rush of feeling of, you know, sympathy for your heroes. And I think for me, I'm just gonna jump ahead of myself if that's okay, like getting immersed in that story dynamic. You know, I, for example, didn't have many friends in middle school or something like that. I felt like my friends were Han, Luke, and Leia, and Chewie, and I just wanted to be with them and their adventures, and I wanted to, you know, like, be part of the Rebel Alliance and, you know, do some good in the galaxy. Maybe that inspired me later on in terms of my sense of right and wrong and the sort of good I want to do. But let's move on to Carly. Like, how do you use Star Wars as, like, general escapism growing up and maybe even today?
I think growing up, I don't know if it was necessarily as much escapism, like I wanted to leave my own reality. It was more like I couldn't wait to get back to Star Wars.
Right.
Like, I, you know, when I find something I love, I kind of do a really deep dive into it. So for me, it started with the movies, and then it launched off into reading, like, all the EU books and, you know, reading, like, devouring whatever I could on Star Wars. And so any time spent away from Star Wars was like, what am I doing? This is a waste of my time. I could be getting back to, like, I could be, you know, I just finished the first book in the Thrawn trilogy, and there's the second book that's gotta be read. Like, you know, so it was less about, like, my life sucks and more about this is so cool. Like, I just wanna spend time here, you know, spend a few hours reading or watching episode 4 for, like, the millionth time.
Now,
I put it on in the background, actually, while I was packing for Celebration last night.
Nice.
Like, I just had it on. I was like, and then I had to pause a couple times to watch, so I stopped. It took longer to pack. As an adult now, it's interesting, because I think maybe as a kid, I wasn't really experiencing, like, the catharsis, the emotional catharsis of Star Wars as much as I am now. Like, now I'll watch Rogue One and just kind of let myself feel, like, let myself cry, and it feels really good, especially because I have a tendency to not acknowledge how much things are hitting me.
Like things in the real world?
Yeah, okay. Like the stress and the anxiety and everything that's going on and how tumultuous, like, the current political climate is. And I think, I don't know if I necessarily, like, lie awake at night, but it's nice to like put on a movie and then just kind of, you know, like let yourself feel things. So I think that's, it's probably more like more of that than any kind of like escapism really. And then it's, and then for me, it's fascinating like to watch the prequels again, because there is some really great stuff in there, especially with the like political, you know, the tension and all of that, and things that I think I kind of went over my head as a kid. Yeah. So that kind of enriches it for me.
Also in Clone Wars, you know, I'm watching it the full, all the way through right now, and I just got to season three, and I think the politics in that are actually quite brilliant, and like serve as great allegories. But going back to what you said about, you know, being in the theater and letting yourself feel something with the stress of the world on you, I remember reading something, I think a couple of weeks ago, saying that more people are going to the movies now more than ever. Like, and I think it's directly correlated with our political climate and people not wanting to have their attention on the news. So, you know, I think it allows both for that sense of escapism, but also that sort of catharsis you were talking about. Because I know I've certainly felt that, especially like watching something like Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Dennis, how about you?
Well, it's certainly changed over time. When I was a kid, you couldn't just pop Star Wars on TV. You had action figures, and you had a few comic books maybe, and then if you were lucky, you recorded it on a VHS tape off of HBO or when it was on a network station.
USA.
And then you wore that tape out whenever you got the chance. So I remember coming home, and I have two younger brothers, and there was two other kids on the street, and a little girl. She was always Princess Leia. I tended to be either Darth Vader or Han Solo. And it was, you know, and we reenacted those adventures over and over and over again. As I've got older, you know, we've had these movies on VHS, we've had them on DVD, Blu-ray, streaming. They're now everywhere. We've had the Clone Wars, we've had Rebels, we have a new era of comic books, we have novels by the dozens.
Droids and Ewoks.
Yeah. And so, right. And so, there's so many different avenues to, it's a hobby. And what is a hobby but a way of escaping your problems and whatever it is you're working on. I can do Star Wars for fun. I try and make a great product with my own podcast and when I review Star Wars comics. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. As an attorney by trade, I deal with people's rights all day long. Right. And that's a much more serious thing. And so when I go home and I can engage in some Star Wars, whether I'm just vegging out in front of Rogue One or The Force Awakens, or I'm reading a comic book and, you know, trying to figure out how that fits in between, you know, A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
It's a great way to take my, you know, just to, it's a different world, it's a different mindset.
So now I'm going to shift gears 180 degrees. And now we're going to talk about how does Star Wars inform you about the real world and what are the parallels you see and how does that help you better understand our political situation?
You know, and it's interesting because I rewatched the prequels recently. I actually did a complete watch through of all the movies in chronological order.
Nice.
Nice. And one of the things I found really fascinating, besides the intricacies of the Republic and how you see characters like Chancellor Palpatine, you know, pre-Emperor Palpatine,
Uncle Palpy,
you know, and Padme, and trying to navigate that, and it's fascinating to me to see like how much happens behind the scenes and how much goes into those inner workings that the general, you know, populace isn't privy to. And so I think that's something I always try to keep in mind, like what's really going on behind the scenes that they're not sharing with us, and who's, you know, who's greasing palms and who's, you know, trying to manipulate the situation to their advantage, and you know, things aren't cut and dry, I think.
Yeah.
So one of the things I try to do, like when I actually do read the news, is try to keep a like more balanced perspective. So if I read something that's slamming one person, I'm like, well, let's go to this site and see what this person has to say. So you kind of form a more well-rounded perspective, you know, because unfortunately nothing's really objective anymore.
Seriously, like you can't turn on any sort of thing.
So I remember 2005 when Revenge of the Sith came out. It drew a lot of very politically charged responses. as soon as that movie premiered. And I remember sitting in the theater, front row in the theater, because I had a weird thing back then where I just liked to be in front row with my neck crooked back. And
watching a Star Wars film at that.
Right, boom, right, nothing separated, right there. I was in Tatooine for a moment. It was crazy. But, yeah, no, it was interesting because I felt there was a really strong anti-war message that came across. And Lucas, he never really came out and said, yes, this was very, I'm making like an anti-war film. He really kind of didn't take a very strong stance on that. But it's there, and especially in 2005, absolutely, it very much came off that way. About two years after the Iraq War started, about that. It was definitely charged in people's minds. So I think that was one of the first and biggest times that Star Wars influenced my view of the world and how it was taking a stance against politics. But I mean, going back, I mean, you can tell, you know, how Star Wars is anti-war, going all the way back to the 70s and you know, anti-Nixon, anti-Vietnam. I mean, Lucas is on record talking about Nixon even being the inspiration for the Emperor.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cool. So, I don't know. I'm just rambling right now, guys. We can let someone else take it out.
That's how I don't understand people that say there's no, like, political undertones in Star Wars.
No.
Yeah, what are you watching? Like, that entire scene in The Force Awakens where they're debuting the power of Starkiller Base, and you just see all
he's making a neo-Nazi speech.
I remember finding like a screen cap of that shot and just looking at, you know, and they're doing the salute, and you're just like, how does this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, JJ,
they whack you over the head with it.
JJ said in an interview he imagined the First Order as what it would be like if the Nazis who went to Argentina came back, regrouped, and, you know, had an army trying to...
Oh, I got theories about that. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Raise a clone.
Yeah. But, Joe, back to what you said. Don't worry, you weren't rambling at all. You know, you were hitting, like, the exact inspirations for, like, George Lucas's vision. And, you know, he had the story planned out for the prequels years before the Iraq War started or 9/11 happened. And, you see this thing repeated in history so often, it just happened to, coincide the Star Wars prequels and the Iraq War, and
I certainly think that the politics leading up to and after 9/11 definitely influenced his final drafts of the screenplays, 100%. All I'm doing is really regurgitating an amazing article by my buddy Michael O'Connor. The Politics of Star Wars, basically, which was...
Great article. We've had Michael on the podcast before.
Yeah. So I'm literally just regurgitating. If you want to know all about the history of the politics of Star Wars, read that.
Yeah. It's a really great article, you guys.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think back on it when I was a kid. One of the things I loved about A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi was... is that I didn't see them as political at all. And especially as a teenager, it was, you know, this is my great science fantasy movie, and it's not Full Metal Jacket, it's not Platoon, it's not any of these movies that clearly had some tie to Vietnam or something like that. And now I'm an adult, and I'm like, well, shoot, now I know the truth. And it's when you got to the prequels that you really learn... It hits you over the head. There's politics in every single one of those movies, whether there's inaction in the Senate, or the Senate being manipulated to grant emergency powers, or Padme asking, do you think we're on the wrong side in Revenge of the Sith? You can't get away from the political messages there. And I don't think, you know, I have children that, watch these Star Wars movies all the time. They don't see the politics right now. But I know their day is coming, probably when we get to episodes 15 through 18 at some point in the future. But George definitely had ideas, and he really embedded in those movies. When you get a little bit more worldwise, they certainly come out.
The moment it hit me was when I was a sophomore in high school, and we were learning a lot about the Roman Empire, and I'm hearing all these terms about Senate and emperors, and how, you know, emperors started in the Roman Empire, and translating that back, all of a sudden I started thinking about Star Wars. I'm like, well, there was a Senate there, and then it got dissolved, and it always kind of clicked at that moment. And then I got, oh crap, Star Wars is political, and it, yeah, I totally remember when that all came together for me.
Yeah, and then when you even look at the original trilogy, you know, Darth Vader was in all black. The Emperor wore dark robes. The stormtroopers were stark white. And meanwhile, the heroes had their blues and their greens and their camouflage colors. They were, you know, they were earth tones. They looked warm and inviting. And so you had this very clear idea of what a good guy was and what a bad guy is. The world's not like that.
Yep.
And now you get to the prequels, and they blend that. The clones, the ones wearing the white armor, are the good guys. White means good, and, you know, cowboys and Indians and whatnot. But he changed the palette on everybody, and it made that very clear picture that politics isn't all black and white. Even the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, the opening crawl says, you know, there's heroes on both sides, evil is everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, what do you do with that?
And then they take it one step further in Force Awakens and make Finn's journey about, you know, the whole thing is we've never seen a stormtrooper without their helmet before, and it completely humanized them in a way that we've never seen. So it's like, you know, you can take somebody who's been quote-unquote behind enemy lines, you know, somebody who's believed his life was going to be about one thing and then decided one day it was not going to, you know, decided to be a hero instead. So it's, I think that's just fascinating because it's completely changing, you know, I think Star Wars as a franchise is kind of growing away from that, like, black versus white. Because even in Rogue One, you get characters like Jyn, you get Cassian, who in the name of the Rebellion has done some pretty dishonorable things. So I just think that's really, really fascinating.
Yeah, we're dealing in so many more shades of gray. And, you know, in Star Wars Rebels, for example, we have the Bendu who, like, says, I'm strictly in the middle. I am not going to intercede in this conflict. But
look at that worked out.
But going back to what you said, Carly, about Finn and getting more of that psychology behind the bad guys. And just to let you guys know, this is the only time you'll ever hear me express sympathy for that monster Kylo Ren for what he did.
Did you not see my shirt?
Oh, I didn't see it. Kylo Ren is a punk bitch. Awesome. Nice. Anyway. But yeah, getting to see more of his perspective and his struggle between the light and the dark is it's really interesting and compelling. And going back to what you said, Dennis, about in the prequels, how there are heroes and villains on both sides. And, you know, is the Republic's action really justified in going to Geonosis, essentially attacking preemptively, even though we do know that the Separatists do have a droid army, they haven't done anything with it yet. So I really love how it is exploring, like, these deep nuances. So we talked about this overarching political message from Star Wars, but I'm curious if there are any other political messages you guys have taken from the franchise. I mean, I can start. Like, I'll just say, I think something really important that Star Wars has conveyed since its inception is, and this isn't exactly obvious in the original trilogy, but the Empire is a human supremacist organization. You never see any aliens. You never see, interestingly enough, any females, but they weren't necessarily sexist. I think that's a retcon. You know, now we have Grand Admiral Sloan, Admiral Sloan?
Admiral Sloan.
Admiral Sloan, apologies.
Maybe in Aftermath she became Grand Admiral.
She did.
Yeah. But you had it very much as a monolith, whereas the Rebellion was more diverse, this ragtag team, and didn't necessarily have that many aliens at first, but still, you saw by Return of the Jedi that these were species all, like, united against the tyranny of the Empire. And I started researching more on this on Wikipedia and other websites about the Emperor's grand vision, that to have a human supremacist empire that would be pure. And even in the Revenge of the Sith novelization, Dennis, we talked about this when you were on our show, Count Dooku actually had a vision for that as well. He actually hated working with these alien species and the Separatists. He thought, oh, when Palpatine and I, you know, do away with this charade, we will create a grand order of, you know, human supremacy and order. And I think we see that a lot in our own world. You know, obviously, the direct parallel is Nazi Germany and the idea of the Aryan species or race, and I think we still see that daily in our world today. I think you see so many cultures and groups fighting today over very skin deep differences. Mm-hmm. And I think most unfortunately of all today, you're seeing a resurgence of white supremacy in our very nation. It's not as big as, you know, Nazi Germany or anything like that. It's relatively minuscule, but it is potently dangerous and something we all need to be united against. And
yeah, so the Empire definitely were seeking a human hegemony. And it's interesting to think about that, because in a world with millions of different alien species, that's something you can very clearly delineate between, okay, these are humanoids and these are not. But in the real world, what we define as human is just another idea of what's acceptable and who is the other. Totally. And it's an interesting parallel there between thinking, yeah, this is the Empire we're seeking, and these are the people who we are letting into our society, and these are the people who we are excluding. And I think there's a lot to read into there. Definitely not something that Lucas was turning a blind eye to.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, a different political message that resonates with me just comes from The Phantom Menace, and mm-hmm. it was the fact that Naboo was blockaded and there was suffering going on there, and then the Senate was powerless to do anything because they were wrapped up in procedure.
Yeah, gridlock.
And so it's this political inaction in the guise of trying to do the right thing politically, which is gather evidence, gather discussion, debate an issue, but the perpetrators of the violence were using the procedures to prevent justice, so to speak. They were attempting to prolong the situation by calling for committees, by demanding investigations when they knew full well what was going on.
Like filibustering almost.
Right.
In a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah. It was totally obstructionist along the way, which I think is a clear comment on our own political situation that we're very good at discussing things and tabling things and putting it through committees multiple times, but to actually get real action is a Herculean feat.
I mean, the Trade Federation were essentially lobbyists that got a seat in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
which is scary.
Absolutely.
Totally.
The only thing I was just thinking about in terms of, like, a political message is, like, how much government is kind of willing to turn a blind eye, or to what degree are they willing to kind of ignore, you know, something corrupt that may be going on? Like, what's the final straw? Because I'm reminded of, I don't know if any of you have read Catalyst. You know, when they're building the Death Star, and then, like, I think even in Rogue One, isn't there a thing where when they do the test fire on Jedha City, but then they say they're going to tell the Senate it was, like, what, a mining explosion or something? They say they're going to feed them some answer about how, you know, because they're trying to cover up the fact that they have this super weapon that's not
There is no
finished.
Death Star.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's something I've been thinking about, is, like, how much corruption, you know, is this body of government going to kind of just let filter under the rug, and what's going to be the thing that finally, like, what's the final straw? So
how much are we willing to tolerate in
right.
the background? How much are we willing to ignore? It's I think that's definitely something that we need to consider today,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than any time. So on to something else. We're seeing an increasing usage of Star Wars imagery in political campaigns. I think we saw a lot of this in the 2016 election. Hillary Clinton said at the end of her debate with Bernie Sanders, "May the Force be with you." But I think most prominently that people have taken notice is the usage of Carrie Fisher's image in the quote, resistance and the women's movement. I'm curious, like, how fitting do you think this really is?
Specifically Carrie, or just...
Specifically Carrie Fisher, and maybe some other examples.
I don't have a problem with it as long as it's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like oftentimes certain politicians want to use Star Wars imagery just because they think it's in and it's cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that I don't appreciate. But when someone identifies with Carrie Fisher as a symbol for their movement, Well, there's a certain genuineness to that. I mean, anyone can be a Star Wars fan, and I'm not going to be a gatekeeper about that.
Yeah,
I've heard a certain number of politicians, and I'm not going to name names, that simply they didn't know what they were talking about, but a lightsaber is cool. They know the name Luke Skywalker. Who doesn't know the name Luke Skywalker? To call yourself Luke Skywalker and, you know, point to the other side as Darth Vader and the Emperor. And it's a shorthand, sure, why not? But it doesn't – I think there's a – I don't believe it's honest most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I remember the night of the election, I started seeing the Rebel symbol just pop up everywhere on social media. And I feel like that reaction was very... It came from a very natural and intuitive place.
Mm-hmm.
That this is how the opposition party, in this case Democrats and liberals, were seeing their position and how it was time to... stand up for what you believe in. So I feel like that point was very... It was a really interesting moment where people took something that they've grown up with or they believe in, and they transferred it onto some sort of practical use.
Mm.
Notwithstanding people who are using it for disingenuous gains, like Dennis said, I think that it was a really interesting moment where Star Wars took on a bigger... place in pop culture than maybe it ever had.
Oh, absolutely.
Where in people's adult lives, they were able to apply something that they may have grown up with their entire life and see a greater use for the morals that were instilled in, even going back maybe 30, 40 years.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I saw a lot of criticism, I think, against fans that were talking about the election in terms of Star Wars or talking about it in terms of, I don't know, Harry Potter. And saying, like, oh, this is, we gotta form Dumbledore's army, or we've gotta form the Rebel Alliance. And my feeling is, like, you know, I don't have a problem with people talking about it in those terms, but when you use it as a way to kind of, like, shut out the real problems and everything that's going on, that's when it becomes an issue, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
But, you know, we see things like, you know, the language of the resistance and, like, how important it is to resist and to not just simply lay down and take certain things as they come and be accepting of, you know, some of these actions that are currently coming out of the Trump White House. And so I think, for me, it was inspiring to see things like Princess Leia used on a sign at the Women's March, you know, things like a women's place is in the resistance.
Exactly.
You know, it's not, I don't think people are saying like, oh, we're gonna, you know, form a rebellion, but like, we do have to find ways to resist in our own, in what way we can, and to say, no, I'm not gonna stand for whatever, and, you know, and to use our voice. I think that's really the most important thing, so.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing is, it's just, to what I was saying earlier is that, growing up, fans of science fiction and Star Wars and, you know, space fantasy and all that, we were that's when geek was a dirty word. That's when geek was an insult. And now it's a popular movement. And so I sometimes feel like the politicians that are trying to embrace it now were the same people that were criticizing and putting it down back then. So it's, a part of me resents that it is, you know.
Disingenuous.
Yeah, it's, you know, just to try to add some clarity to what I'm saying, it's that, you know, I find that I know women that were a part of the Women's March and that were holding up that Princess Leia sign.
Yeah.
And they believed in Carrie Fisher, they believed in Princess Leia and what she represented, which, you know, she was a princess, but she was not the woe is me princess that got slung over the shoulder and taken to the top of the tower and held behind a locked door. She was only captured because she was outgunned. She shot back at the stormtroopers. She led her own escape when it came to that.
Somebody has to save our skin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she is a very powerful symbol, and it was very fitting for that movement.
Yeah, I think it was absolutely fitting. I was at the Women's March in D.C., and seeing her image around was extraordinarily inspiring, especially with her extraordinary life and her advocacy, and the character of Princess Leia, who always, always, always resists and rebels against overwhelming odds. And I personally think it was extremely appropriate. And I'm happy to see, I'm sort of melancholy happy to see, after the unfortunate passing of Carrie Fisher, that her image is essentially immortalized. And, yeah, I think there's like, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I think someone asked Mark Hamill like what he thought about it, like, and he was like, she would have been honored.
Basically. Yeah.
And I was like, well, let's take it from someone who knew, right? Who would know?
Agreed.
So.
Agreed. And look at Mark's advocacy on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Oh man.
By the way, sort of side note, have you guys listened to The Trumpster?
Oh yes.
Yes.
So funny.
He's so good.
For our listeners that don't know, this is Mark Hamill voiced the Joker in the Batman animated series, and now he's recording Trump tweets in his Joker voice. It's absolutely brilliant. All right, well, thank you all so much. This was our Live from Celebration episode of Beltway Banthas, and everyone, where can everyone find you on social media and your other work?
You can find me on Twitter at my name, Carly Lane. I am one of the co-hosts of the Supergirl Radio podcast.
Awesome podcast.
We talk about the CW show, the comic, pretty much any incarnation of Kara Danvers, Kara Zor-El. And I am also currently writing for Nerdist, which is why I'm here at Star Wars Celebration, and Sci-Fi Wire.
Awesome.
You can find me at RichardZapp.com. Along with Suara and Dennis, and I'll be there writing and publishing a lot of amazing things. Brews and Blasters is my weekly show, but you can also find me on the Dunecast, which is a monthly show about Dune, and whenever Game of Thrones comes back, we'll be doing a We Know Nothing podcast.
Yes, can't wait.
Yes.
You can find me on Twitter at DJKVER2. You can my podcast is Starship Sabers and Scoundrels, which is on, as Joe just mentioned, on the RetroZap Podcast Network. And I also review all the Star Wars comics as a try to keep them on a weekly basis, and those reviews are also on RetroZap.com.
Everyone.
Every single one. Literally. You can't miss it. Alright, well, thank you guys so much, and may the Force be with you. Always.